Utility Committee to order. We have four matters on calendar. Item number two, AB 1288 from Assemblymember Eggman has been pulled. And we have two matters that are proposed consent calendar, items four and five from the Assembly Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials. We will address those as soon as we establish a quorum, which is we're one member short. So we'll proceed as a subcommittee. Good morning, Assemblymember Quirk Silva. You have AB 558 on flex fuel vehicles. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be here on this site. I haven't seen some of you in a little bit, but you're all looking very good this morning. AB 558 requires the Air Resources Board to develop a summary on the production and registration of flexible fuel vehicles and E85 fuel. To make that summary public and provide it to the Environmental Protection Agency by April 1st, 2019. The bill also requires the development of recommendations for policy based on this report by October 1st, 2019. FFVs are often overlooked component of reducing the largest producers of greenhouse gas in our state, where the focus has been on hybrid and electric vehicles. And so, again, as we talk about multiple subjects up here at the state, I'm always a believer that having many options in the toll bank is always a great way for us to look at the variety of people we represent. This is despite the existing available technology and market, which has grown alongside near and zero emission vehicles. Flex fuel vehicles utilizing E85 are a qualifying fuel under the low carbon fuel standard set by the ARB and can help California to reach our very ambitious emission reduction goals and reduce our dependence on petroleum. With me today, I have Mr. Mike Lewis, who is the co-founder of Pearson Fuels, and Mr. Graham Knowles, who is the executive director of the Low Carbon Fuels Coalition, in support and as witnesses.
Great. I know we want to hear from you and learn more about energy density and sort of, you know, your crystal ball on the rising gasoline prices. We've got this administration has taken some actions with regard to exports, so it seems that there might be a lot of plant material that's available that could be used as ethanol. And when is that? When do we get to that perfect storm where the price is right? You know, where if I'm going to get 30% less efficiency on the transportation putting in ethanol, that, you know, the born again environmentalists will do that because they like that. But when would the average person, what's going to be that blend between gas pricing and ethanol pricing so that they say, oh, that price is lower, I'll put that in my car and I have to fill up more often, but because of the combo, it's going to be worth it. So please proceed.
Thank you. Chairman and members, my name is Mike Lewis. I'm with Pearson Fuels out of San Diego. I came up for this today, and I co-founded Pearson Fuels. And to go right in to address your question, we have a lot of different support for E85. We have, at the state level, we have the low carbon fuel standard, and at the federal level, we have the renewable fuel standard, which that's what you're talking about when you're talking about exporting the fuel. And the RINs give us an advantage there, but the RINs values have come down a good bit. But I can tell you that our stations, to give you an idea, one of the largest, of a certain oil company's franchisor has converted 35 of his diesel tanks to E85 with us because he has found that selling diesel at the retail level is not as productive as selling E85 at the retail level. So I would tell you that that much of the time we are already there as far as energy density. I mean, we have stations that are selling for a dollar less a gallon on a regular basis. Not all of them, because we don't control the retail prices. But when a station is selling for a dollar a gallon less, or even 80 or 90 cents a gallon less, that makes up for any reduction you get in fuel economy reduction, because it is true there's less energy in the fuel, but there's higher octane too, and so most of the vehicles are not built to take advantage of the extra octane, but there's the upside to that if the vehicle manufacturers want to do that.
Okay. Next witness. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Graham Noyes. I'm the executive director of the Low Carbon Fuels Coalition. The mission of the coalition is the support and expansion of sound low carbon fuel policies, and we're in support of AB 558. We see it as a valuable tool in California's toolbox. California's actually invested significant funds, awarded over $12 million to build out a network of E85 stations. And what we're seeing today is that network is really working. Sales have tripled in the last 5 years of E85, in large part because the economics are indeed working. Consumers at the pump who are driving FFEs can choose whether to buy gasoline or E85. They're increasingly choosing E85. And that's why we see this as an opportunity that ought to be kept in the toolbox, not that it's going to be displacing zero-emission vehicles or hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, but on the liquid fuel side of the fleet, this is something that works. We've got an existing fleet. We want to see that fleet continue to grow, and we want to, in particular, see those vehicles use more E85 to achieve the petroleum displacement that it provides and also the greenhouse gas reduction, which I believe in the report was put at about 20% per gallon in the analysis. We're supportive of that. We've seen the low carbon fuel standard drive carbon intensity of ethanol down and attract more non-corn ethanol to the state. Right now, the E85 is displacing about 13 million gallons per year of petroleum. We could do at least, if these were fully utilizing E85, we'd be displacing over 400 million gallons per year just with the existing fleet. To put that in perspective, that's about 8 times the petroleum reduction that the EV fleet delivers. So for these reasons, we support 558.
Not to show my cards that I don't have a new car, but if you go and you buy a new 2019 something, whatever it is that... Can that use the E85 fuel and the regular fuel, or are there special vehicles that use it?
Only if it's a flex fuel vehicle. So gotcha. It'll look just like, for instance, and one of the things that's sort of great about flex fuel vehicles is they exist in the SUVs and the trucks. So you could be buying an F-150, and you could buy an F-150 that's not an FFV or an F-150 that is an FFV. Only if you get the FFV can you put the E85 in it.
So presumably the report part of this bill that provides policy recommendations to us would allow the legislature to know what is it that we could do. You know, we've got, even if we hit a grand slam and we get 5 million electric vehicles by 2030, we still got 23 million or whatever the staff report says of other vehicles that are around. Senator Stone, you had a question.
The gentleman from Pierce Fuels, thank you for being here and flying up from San Diego. I know it's not an easy jaunt to get up here. You mentioned about this fleet that you just converted to be able to use your fuels. Is that a modification of their engine, or do you have to completely replace the engine with something else in these trucks?
What I was talking about there is there was it's a large franchisor of a oil company.
Okay.
So like, a branded gas station.
Yes.
So it was 35 of those gas stations
that converted
the station from diesel to E85, not the vehicles themselves.
So I noticed I recently had to help a friend move, and we rented a big U-Haul truck, and I went to go gas it up, and it said right on there, do not use E85 fuel.
Right.
So obviously diesel fuel is dirty, right? I mean, it creates emissions.
Some say there's clean diesel.
Yeah, okay, well...
Dirtier than E85.
Exactly. So my question is, for these larger trucks, if they wanted to transition completely to be E85, is that a modification, a simple modification of an engine, or is that just you totally have to replace that engine with something that is compatible?
In other states, there are E85 conversion kits that people can buy to change their processor or do some software upgrades, and it will. They market it that you can convert your gasoline, not diesel, but you can convert your gasoline vehicle to E85. But in California, all that has to be CARB certified, and they're not aftermarket certified CARB conversions. Okay. So in California, you have to buy the vehicle new. And they're flex fuel vehicle. Like you said, you saw a little badge that said no E85, but there are, I believe, 1.7 million of them in California that are E85. but it has to be both that way. And if you pay attention just driving home, if you look on the back of cars, you'll see little badges that say flex fuel. And there are more of those on the roads than there are diesel vehicles in California.
You know, we provide incentives in the state to purchase electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Are there any incentives at all, state or federal, that promote flex fuel type of vehicles?
There aren't, because there was really no additional cost to the consumer. It's about $200 for the manufacturers to make a flex fuel vehicle, mm-hmm. but none of them have ever line-itemed that and charged for that. You can buy a flex fuel vehicle or a non-flex fuel vehicle from the same price of the automakers. So you don't really, that's a big advantage, because then it's available to people with varying incomes. You know, you can just buy a F-150 truck or whatever.
Right.
And if it's flex fuel, it just kind of comes with the truck.
So, but there's cost to the consumers and there's cost to the environment, right? So there mm-hmm. is an environmental argument that could be made that these fuels would be preferred over traditional fossil fuels. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, you know, would there be an idea to utilize cap and trade funds to provide a modest incentive for this industry to grow by helping people achieve the goal of buying these more efficient, environmentally efficient vehicles?
Well, maybe next October, that we, if we get those policy recommendations and they yeah. say this is something not under the cap of cap and trade, and they're clearly not under the cap, I mean the actual vehicles, and it may mm-hmm. be, it may be worth our investment.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
you. Let's hear from others who are in support of AB 558 that are here. Getting back to the traditional hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Russell Nowak. On behalf of Sioma, we proudly support this bill. It's a good bill. We're investing in the infrastructure with our member, and we are very proud to support this flex fuel bill. Thank you.
Okay, opposition to AB 558. There's anybody here who opposes AB 558? All right, let's close the public hearing and ask Senator Hill has a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And it's really not a question. I just, I agree with the comments that the Chair and Vice Chair have made. It seems, that we need to do what we can to necessarily incentivize, but one, know the market and what's out there, but two, really kind of encourage those who have the opportunity to take advantage of that opportunity and getting, I think, looking at the future, you know, we're still at the when we look at the ZEV issue, we're at the, and we remember the Betamax or VHS stage still.
And
when we cross that line somewhere, I think hopefully the market and everything will evolve into a position. But until we get there, I think this gives us the benefit that I think we're looking for. So I'm certainly happy to support the bill.
Well, Ms. Quirk-Silva, if you'd like to close, once we establish a quorum, we'll go about our business. But please.
Yes, thank you so much for hearing this bill. I think the conversation is really timely because, as you say, it's a few steps behind some of the other well-marketed choices people have, but I think that's the exact point, is people want choices, and I exactly had the same experience where we had to rent a 12-passenger vehicle. My daughter just got married, so we were, and I got a call from my sister, said, what kind of fuel do you put into it? And I'm like, I don't know. But the point is that I think when your neighbors and friends on your block, I live in a 1950s block, and people are starting to purchase new cars, and we always kind of stand out and say, oh, what did you get? And it's usually related around fuel and how many miles per there. So I think when that conversation hits the regular folks on the street and they're making decisions, that we start to see that it's catching up. But certainly it's a great tool, and I ask for your support.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you
very much for your testimony. We'll move to item number 3. This is AB 2345 by Assemblymember Reyes, which is talking about permitting and the Department of Toxic Substance Control. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
We read the veto message. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. AB 2345 requires an applicant for the renewal of a hazardous waste facility permit to submit for review at least 2 years before its expiration permits that expire after July 1st, 2021. In addition, the bill requires the Department of Toxic Substance Control to post on its website an estimated timeline of key milestones in the review process. The department is responsible for the permitting of 119 hazardous waste facilities in California and has been under much scrutiny over recent years due to a lack of transparency, issues with temporary permits that have lasted decades, and an inability to complete tasks in a timely manner. In response to these problems, the 2015-16 Budget Act created an independent review panel to oversee the department's permitting, enforcement, and fiscal management. One of the recommendations of the panel was to require permit applicants to submit their applicant information on a timely basis and establish accountability mechanisms. This bill accomplishes both of these goals by requiring an earlier review of applications, as well as establishing department accountability to both facilities and the community by mandating posting a timeline of estimated dates of key milestones in the application process. Here to testify in support of this bill is Ingrid Brostrom with the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment.
Good morning. On behalf of both CRPE, Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment, and the California Environmental Justice Alliance, I support this bill. DTSC has faced a serious issue of backlog permits. In 2013, it faced about a third of its permits third of the hazardous waste facilities were operating on expired permits. That backlog has only continued to grow and is forecast is that it will continue to grow in many years to come. DTSC itself estimates that its goal is to process permits in a two-year time frame. At this point, by design, we are asking DTSC to allow facilities to operate on expired permits because the applications now are received so near the permit expiration date. So unless we mirror the goal timelines of the DTSC, we are asking communities to live near these facilities where they may not be up to date standards. There will not be timely review of compliance history. And so we do see this as an important environmental justice issue. We hope to see hazardous waste facilities operating on current permits with the necessary review and oversight of DTSC. And for these reasons, we support the bill. Thank you.
Others in support of AB 2345, please come forward. All right, opposition. Are there those opposed to AB 2345? All right, we'll close the public hearing. Members, you may recall this. We had an almost identical bill. There's some changes based on the IRP recommendations, and you heard those IRP recommendations here. I don't have any specific questions. So, Ms. Reyes, we don't have a quorum yet, but if you'd like to close.
I respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, if we could have the members who are members of this committee, this is our regularly scheduled time that we meet on Wednesday, the odd Wednesday of odd weeks of the month, if we can have the members come down here and establish a quorum. Seeing Ms. Skinner, let's establish a quorum. Please call the roll.
Wykowski.
Here.
I'm sorry.
Here.
Senator Stone.
Here.
Senator Gaines. Senator Hill. Senator Lara, Senator Skinner.
Here.
Senator Stern.
Okay, we establish a quorum. Is there a motion on the consent calendar? This is items 4 and 5. There's a motion by Senator Stone. Please call the members. This is items AB 2900 and AB 2901 from ESTM.
Item number 4, AB 2900, by the Committee on
don't call each individual bill, so
the motion is due pass.
You just say that the motion is due pass with a recommendation of consent.
Okay. The motion is due pass with a recommendation of consent. Wykowski?
Aye.
Stone?
Aye.
Gaines? Hill?
Aye.
Lara? Skinner?
Aye.
Stern?
That those matters have 4 votes. We will keep the rolls open for a short time.
I'll move AB
Okay, there's a motion on item number one, AB 558, by Quirk Silva. Please call the roll.
Okay, item number one, AB 558, by Assemblymember Quirk Silva. Motion is due pass to the Transportation and Housing Committee. Wieckowski.
Aye.
Stone.
Aye.
Stone, aye. Gaines. Hill.
Aye.
Hill, aye. Lara. Skinner. Stern.
Call the absent members. This is item number one, Quirk Silva on Flex Fuels. Please call the absent members once again.
Skinner.
Aye.
Skinner, aye. Stern.
Aye.
Stern, aye.
Okay. We'll keep the rolls open momentarily. There's a motion by Senator Stone on AB 2345. 2345, please call the roll.
Okay, item number three, AB 2345, by Assemblymember Reyes. The motion is due pass to the Senate Appropriations Committee. Wieckowski.
Aye.
Wieckowski, aye. Stone.
Aye.
Stone, aye. Gaines. Hill.
Aye.
Hill, aye. Lara. Skinner.
Aye.
Skinner, aye. Stern.
Aye.
Stern, aye.
Okay, we'll keep that open, roll open. Please call the consent calendar again, the absent members.
Senator Gaines. Senator Lara. Senator Stern.
Aye.
Stern, aye.
Okay, members, that concludes our calendar today. We have, I understand that Senator Gaines and Senator Lara are en route. We'll see you next week at our information hearing.
It was rough.
Madam Assistant, or the Assistant, please call the absent members on the consent calendar, items 4 and 5 of our calendar.
All of them. Senator Gaines. Senator Lara.
Aye.
On item number one, this is Quirk Silva, 558 on Flex Fuels. Please call the absent members.
Senator Gaines. Senator Lara.
On item number three, as item number two has been pulled, item number three is AB 2345 with Assemblymember Reyes on DTSC permitting. Please call the absent members.
Senator Gaines. Senator Lara.
Aye.
Lara, aye.
Aye, thank you. Wait for our absent members. That's it. Yeah, send them over. Right. Assistant, let's open the rolls again on our consent calendar. This is items 4 and 5, AB 2900 and AB 2901. Please call the absent members.
Senator Gaines.
Aye.
Gaines, aye.
Okay, let's open up the rolls on AB 558 by Cork Silva. This is flex fuel vehicles. Please call the absent members.
Senator Gaines.
Aye.
Gaines, aye.
And finally, our last matter, AB 2345 by Senator Reyes regarding DTSC permitting. Please call the absent members.
Senator Gaines.
Aye.
Gaines, aye.
All right. All the members, all the measures before us are approved unanimously. We are now adjourned.